And then they had, who was the buffoon? John Flanagan remembers his name. Who was the buffoon that Rumsfeld was paying as a consultant? That was supposedly, when we landed him over there, he was going to become the next president. And
yes, I can remember that.
And as soon as the guy got there, they got out of him, they were going to hang the guy. They couldn't stand
it. It's, you know, Colin Powell, the only stain on him, you know, his reputation overseas was he's wise but weak. And Cheney, because he said that, he said, you know, and out of loyalty to Bush, he went along with it because Bush asked him to. But he said this, you know, you break it, you own it. And that's exactly what he said to Bush and to Cheney. And there is a book I've yet to read called The Achilles Trap about this. And, you know, I'm afraid it's going to be like reading Original Sin. It'll be so depressing, I'll have to put it down, by, you know, about Biden and Jake Tapper. But so, you know, Hussein was just a disgusting individual. He was as bad as they get. However, you know, he kept al-Qaeda. I mean, the Iraqis did not think, this was documented, they said he will never take us out because who is he going to get to fight all the Islamic extremists in Iran, or as a buffer with Iran? And boy, we screwed that up. I mean,
there were a lot of people, my cousin included. You were the one who told me. Was it Churchill and T.S. Lawrence put Iraq together? The Kurds, the Sunnis, and the Shia, all in the same place. They all hated each other. And the only, again, I have no justification for the man. The only thing that holds something like that together, sort of like Yugoslavia for a while, is some knucklehead like him. So you strip him out of there, all of a sudden the place falls apart. Now, look at all the antics we had to do with Iran over the last 20 years. And look at all the trouble they're causing. I'm not saying Hussein would have stopped all that, but I don't think it would have been as bad. Do you?
No. No. I mean, Iraq was an extremely good counterweight. You know, but that's a whole different... I was reading another book about Iran's strategy, and this one, he's a John Hopkins professor, and he claims that we are misreading. First of all, Iran is a very voracious... I mean, come on, when you start to support and fund proxy militias around your biggest enemy, you know, the Houthis, the Hamas, and Hezbollah, and also Iraq, that, you know, you're not a good guy.
No,
so
God,
this,
no.
Their whole strategy of survival has been, his claim is that, look at this, is really a strategy of survival for them in their mind. They're hardcore nationalistic as far as what they're trying to do. But going back to, you know, the other question, my question is always this: what makes us think the Iraqis, the Iranians, the Venezuelans, and you can just go down the list, are any less nationalistic and proud of their countries than we are? They really don't like people invading their country.
I know, nobody really likes that too much.
Yeah, last I looked, nobody likes it. By the way, Tony Blair never recovered from Iraq. His whole legacy was destroyed by Iraq. But, you know, this is the one thing that we always seem to miss. You know.
Well, what is the story now with arresting somebody's wife? Now, when somebody finally arrests Trump, are we going to arrest his wife too? Is that something new?
That did raise eyebrows.
Well, somebody, you know,
why are we arresting his wife?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe there's a reason, but it seems a little odd.
This is my thing. If this went before a normal grand jury, I think they would have a hard time getting an indictment on this guy. Well, it was all hearsay.
Well, let's zero in on the oil piece a little bit. This is going on in Libya. I mean, there's a history to this. And actually, now I'm going to have to go read the book you bought me. You know, America's history in the Middle East. And it's all about the brown stuff, the oil. And it's, you know, and people get into these places and they find oil. I mean, actually, the first oil discovery over there that most people don't know, and I didn't know until I read it, was actually a British guy in Iran, of all places. You would have guessed it was in Saudi Arabia, but it really wasn't. But he found oil in Iran. And when he was How long was he over there, Jan? Didn't find it, and finally his last well before they were going to cut off his funding from Britain, he found he struck low on his last well or so. Anyway,
yep.
Some story. And so all of a sudden, all these companies come in there, and they pretty much take the place over. Now, they hire some people there, I imagine, how much they pay them, but most of the money drains out of the people who actually own it, being the people there, because the new people think they discovered it belongs to them, even though it's somebody else's country. So that goes on for a while, and inevitably, in these places, you end up with some strong man that kicks out the people that think they own the country and the oil. I mean, this happened in Libya. Who was the guy that was in some oil companies managed to sort of hang in there, and one of the best at that was Armin Hammer's place, Occidental.
Yeah.
Because in Libya, I forgot the name of the guy who was before the mole man, but they kicked out these oil companies, and Occidental went in, and Armin Hammer was pretty good at dealing with people around the world. He had done that his whole life, and somehow he managed to get Oxy in there for cents on the dollar from what the other places had left. Now, I think when the mole man came in, I think he booted Oxy out too, though, didn't he? I think. I have to go back and read some of this stuff, but every one of them is sort of the same thing. And now, these people, you know, the oil companies were down in Venezuela. I don't know what kind of deal they gave Venezuela, and they put capital into the place, I'm sure. I mean, I don't know what the deals are. And all of a sudden, somebody comes in with Chavez, right, who booted everybody out. And then didn't Chavez buy Citgo here or something? Don't the Venezuelans own Citgo, or did some weird story? So, okay, the guys that are out are convinced that they really got hosed because, you know, that's really their stuff. Now, the only company from here that's left in Venezuela doing some stuff is Chevron. That's why you see Chevron's up 7% today. It's up $10. Because Chevron's now going to be the lead dog here, because they're kind of the only American company left. So they would be the one that you would put your money on to make money on this Venezuelan oil. Then you also have a bunch of refineries now on the Gulf Coast that are set up for Venezuelan type oil. Because, I mean, I went through a little bit on Friday. Refineries are set up for one kind of oil. Well, maybe, I'm not a chemist on this stuff, but all this stuff.
Yeah, so the Venezuelan oils is high in sulfur content, I think.
Yeah, it's heavy. It's real heavy.
It's known as a dirty oil. Yeah.
And I think it's got to be heated pretty much the whole way. I'm not positive on that, but so there's like 10 refineries that were set up for this stuff. I think Saudi's the same way. Well, now we have all this oil here. I mean, we have, for those that don't know, we're producing like 20 million barrels a day here. If you look at the field production of oil, crude, it will say 13.8. But the number is really 20, because you got to add propane and all the other stuff into it that's not counted in the crude oil. So the actual use of oil here is like 20 per day, and our production's 20 per day. Now, we, depending on a part of the country, we export some and import some just to keep the travel to a minimum. But the fact is, but the problem is, the oil you get from fracking is light. I don't know if it's light sweet, but it's light. So it can't really go to those refineries. So the refineries, you know, are probably clamoring on Trump, you know, knock off Venezuela and bring the stuff here. But you mentioned Cuba, and so did Jan Flanagan, and whenever he's here, he can pile in. Mentioned Cuba. Now, Cuba, you know, with Castro, he's a communist, you know, blah, 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 we got to do something, got to get him the hell out of there. Well, okay, the guy who was there before him, God, was he like, I won't say it, he's very similar to some people we may have in office now.
Oh, yeah.
He absolutely was owned by three or four, U.S. Sugar, U.S. Pineapple. And we basically enslaved the place, right?
Yeah.
And Batista, which could be one of the biggest crooks ever, but he was okay because he was our crook, because he favored three or four big companies, people damn near enslaved. And oh, by the way, the mafia owned Havana, and he made nothing but money. Castro could have been our guy, I think. We said, oh, no, we'd rather have this Batista guy because he's so in Dutch with our people. How did that work out? So we still have people wanting essentially Cuba back. There actually is a law in the books signed by Lyndon Johnson, I'll find it here, that says the Cubans who left in 1959 or wherever get to essentially sue to get their their property, the value of their property back from 1959.
Yeah, Batista. That was his name.
Yeah, Batista.
Batista. Yeah.
Was he like the... Could he possibly have been the crookedest guy ever? Well, that says a lot.
Yeah, corrupt authoritarian.
Yes. Yeah, and actually it's called the... If you want, I didn't make this up. It's called the Helms-Burton Act.
Yep.
And it says here, let's see, the act is named for his original sponsors, Senator Jesse Helms, a fine creature, as I recall, and Dan Burton, a representative of Indiana. It is passed by the 104th Congress and enacted into law by President Bill Clinton. The bill, which had been tabled late 1995, was on blah, blah, blah. It essentially came after the Cuban fighters shot down two private planes, whether shot down over Cuban inventory or whatever. But the law includes a variety of provisions intended to bring about a peaceful transition to a representative democracy and market economy in Cuba. It has international sanctions against the Cuban government, and it essentially has a lot of stuff about television broadcasting, and essentially says a lot of people on his policy. We actually have a law that gives us policy toward a transition government and a democratically elected government in Cuba. Well, we didn't want that when Batista was there, did we? And it says exclusion of certain aliens from the United States, primarily senior officials, majority stockholders, their family, blah, blah, blah. And it allows essentially people to try and get not necessarily your piece of property back, but compensation for stuff that was stolen from you in 1959. So, like, does that mean the mob's descendants get their casino money back, or what?
Well, that would be interesting to watch their descendants go after that.
Hey, that building used to be my dad's casino.
The old New York mob.
Yeah. Well, remember the part in The Godfather when he was down in Cuba, right?
Yep.
It prompts for the retirement of former Soviet Union personnel out of the Cuban military and intelligence facilities. It prohibits recognition of transitional government in Cuba that includes Fidel or Raul Castro. It's unreal. It's a law that says what we're going to do when we take the place back over. How does something like that get passed?
Yeah, but don't forget, this is not just Republican. This is Republican and Democrat. The Florida contingent is extremely anti, and Rubio's one of them, are very, very, they really want to go back and, they can't even think of how corrupt Cuba was before Castro came.
No.
And they still feel that way. My sense is that that's the older generation of politicians. The younger ones are a little bit more nuanced. The younger people, the young Cuban Americans, are more nuanced about everything. We lived in Florida for a while. I don't know if you remember. My sister's down there, so we were down there quite a bit. And, there was back in the mid-2000s, there was a lot of travel between the U.S. and Cuba. All the Cubans, the Cuban Americans I knew visited Cuba all the time. Not all the time, but
we have people here from PTI that, associated with PTI, that used to go down there all the time too.
They fly through Mexico.
Yeah, you fly through Mexico.
They aren't stamped.
Matter of fact, the first time I went down there, I said the place was really, it was dark ages. But then, like 4 or 5 years later, all of a sudden they had restaurants, they had all kinds of stuff. It improved dramatically. The first time, you didn't want to stay in the hotels, you didn't want to eat in any of the restaurants. But it got better, evidently. And I'm not making a push for Cuba or anything, but there's these places all over the world, and everybody's trying to... I don't know what... When you start doing this stuff to a country, and, you have to look at... When we have a constitution that says, only Congress can declare war, and if for a long period of time, from the Bush neocons and people... We haven't declared war, really, I don't think, since World War II. what was Korea? Police action? But at some point, you notify Congress, and they have to come up with some money, or else you can't go to war without any money. It kind of degraded from a Congress declares war to Congress gets notified and comes up with the money for the war, so their Congress is very much involved in the decision. And I'm going to say that the current person in office right now wants none of that. From what I understand, not one person in Congress was informed because, according to Trump, it would have created a leak. Well, we've come a long way. This is the extreme end of this, where one guy thinks he controls the military and he can go after people whenever he damn well pleases. And I'll tell you what, that's not my interpretation of the Constitution. Now, the Trump people think differently. He's their star, you know, and he can do whatever he wants. They elected a dictator, but the dictator, I think he only elected one from here. Now he's going to be a world dictator? Is that his new job?
Just well, curious. It's magnified by the point of what's malapropisms or however we pronounce the word. Yes, we're gonna run Venezuela until it's fixed.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. How many people live in Venezuela? 50 million?
Yeah.
50, 100 million? I don't know. But, I mean, give me a break.
Well, if we think this guy, John Pilon, when you want, Mr. Flanagan, good morning. Yep.
Morning, all.
When you,
hey, John.
If you think the guy, first of all, we got a guy pissed at somebody else who refused to leave office when he lost an election. That's cool on top of it. But let's say the guy was beaten by another guy. There might be a few of us that are dumb enough to think if you get that guy out of there, the person you put in office might be the person who won the election. We want no part of that, do we? The guy they put in there. Trump said he's going to answer to him. I'm not so sure the Venezuelan people really want that. They want this guy out of there, but is that really what they want?
Well, like I said, we are just so shocked when other people happen to be, to be loyal to their country and are nationalistic too. We're so shocked.
Well, I think a lot of people here wanted this guy out of there, and I'm not so sure. I would have liked them out of there, too. I wish they would have kicked them out, though, not us. I don't think they had the reason for that, but that's, I mean, and John, Mr. Flanagan had a lot of insights yesterday on just how far the Chinese were piling in there, and now the Chinese evidently have lent them an awful lot of money and everything. John, you and I were talking about it yesterday. Does that mean, are we gonna stiff the Chinese on the money they lent them, or what?
Oh, absolutely, if we can. Yeah. Hell yeah.
And I think that was the reason for the timing of this. I think there's been a deal in the works for a while because there's been Biden upped the bounty on Maduro's head. So they wanted him out too. And I'm sure there's been plans of how this could be accomplished. And the real variable was the timing of it. But I think that the Chinese meeting on Friday night with Maduro was the tipping point. And I'm not sure. There's rumors now that, Rodriguez, the vice president, had, tipped off the U.S. and was working against Maduro. I don't know how much stock to put into that right now. There was also, I read somewhere that Hakeem Jeffries' staff was trying to tip off Maduro, and they were too late. They were trying to do an end run around, Trump's seizure of him. So this got to be pretty delicately timed. And nobody seems to have thought twice about whether to do it or not. It had to be done now, or it wasn't going to ever be done. So it's pretty timing here.
John, I had mentioned earlier that I actually do believe this. I think there was a big Chinese connection going on here, a big Chinese aspect to this. I think before you got on, I was listening to a pundit who I listened to quite a bit. And he was basically, you can go all the way. I mean, because the Chinese love this. It's a pinprick into us and distracts us from what's going on in Taiwan, and in other places. And I do think that there was a geopolitical aspect. Yes, it's about oil, but in other ways too. I think that the real hardcore neocons were afraid that you'd see Chinese intermediate range missiles in Venezuela. That's what they were. They were very, very concerned. Now, I actually think it's pretty hilarious that an hour after the Chinese meet Madero. He's arrested by the states.
Well, this is according to, just to bring the listeners up to speed, this is according to AI, Stacks and Jacks has gone AI. Chinese influence in Venezuela has been massive, primarily through over $100 billion in oil-backed loans and investments in infrastructure and energy from 2007 to 2015, making China's Venezuela's largest creditor and key partner for Chavez and Maduro. When was Chavez out? I don't know, Jimmy, maybe you looked at it.
2015. About 8 years ago, I think.
2015, okay. This support focused on securing oil for China's growth, financed development projects, and bolstered economy government's U.S. sanctions. But financing slowed as Venezuela's economy collapsed. I mean, how could you even do business with them right now? Their currency's worthless, right? I mean, not even on a bus, I don't know. But here's financial and economic influence. Massive loans. China provided up to $60 billion in oil-backed loans, becoming Venezuela's main source of external financing and its largest creditor, according to various sources like the Inter-American Dialogue over there. Oil is collateral. Loans were repaid with oil shipments. The deal that worked until Venezuela's oil output plummeted. So they're essentially stiffing China now as well because they're not giving them enough oil for the money they gave them. So, you know, it's not like the China's coming out fat and happy here either. Key trade partner, China became Venezuela's largest buyer of oil, taking over 80% of exports at one point, as a major investor in mining and infrastructure under initiatives like the Belt and Road Initiative. So essentially, China is not getting... Now, do those tankers that pile out of there, they're not going to go through the Panama Canal, are they? They got to go around the Cape or around the bottom of South America?
I don't think they can. No, I don't think they can.
No, they don't go through the horn.
Well, can you get to Venezuela? You can't get to the Pacific from Venezuela, can you? I'm not sure of the geography.
You can get a tanker through the Panama Canal.
You got to go through the tip of South America.
Well, anyway, I think China's not real happy with the deals they cut there either. No. They're not. So, I don't know. So, what do you make of that? Are we gonna pay China back? You think this thing gets a little more complicated every second we talk, or what?
Yeah, well, you know, the Venezuela, I think, you know, represented, at least for China, a perfect kind of staging area, because the country, you know, economically, politically, was, you know, a basket case, but it was a Marxist state, you know, in China's mold. So China, you know, saw it as, you know, as a brethren state, and it also was ripe for control, and, you know, neither Chavez nor Maduro were really in any position to say, no, we don't want you here. You know, they needed that kind of involvement to keep afloat. And, you know, it gave them a kind of, you know, security blanket when it came to dealing with the U.S. too. So this looked like a good deal for both China and Venezuela for a time. And, of course, now the rug's been pulled out from under it, and somebody's going to have to backtrack here. I wouldn't want to be on the other end of this deal with Venezuela after Maduro's been pulled.
I mean, you also had Russian military advisors there too. So the whole thing is going to be. I agree with you, John. I would say that it's an authoritarian state. It's not a Marxist state by any stretch of the imagination. It's just an authoritarian state. It's a kleptocracy. It's closer to Russia than it is anything. But, you know, so you had a lot of people that were just, you know, Russia was involved there. China was heavily involved, whether it was from just a commercial standpoint or a geopolitical standpoint. You know, that's up for debate. But, you know, there was a lot of people that really did enjoy tweaking our nose there. Now, but the funny thing is, if you ever think it's bad to be an ally of the United States, well, you could always be an ally of China and Russia. Because Iran has shown that that's not too successful either. I mean...
Explain to me these numbers. How can 80% of the country be in poverty and yet they claim their unemployment rate's only 5%? How can that be?
Well, I mean, come on,
I mean, somebody goes to work every day. There's no money.
Nobody in Venezuela is looking for a job. That's how you get those numbers.
Well, I guess, yeah. I mean, I'm well, we, Jan, and you, Mr. Flanagan, you and I have talked about this for 5 years. How exactly does a place with the, where the money's, how do you get on a bus? You just get on for free or what? Or where you don't pay? And how do you pay the bus driver? I mean, how do the checks go out in, to the governmental people? I mean, you got people driving buses and doing all this stuff, picking up garbage. Do they even get paid or what?
I can't even imagine. I mean, how many people are actually riding the subway in Caracas for what it takes to, you know, buy a ride on it? You need a pretty big wallet to cover that. So.
Weren't you saying that your brother went to Caracas like 20 years ago and said it was...
'90s, 96 or 97.
It was probably very nice then.
Yeah, oh, you said it was beautiful. You know, my sister-in-law got pickpocketed, but, you know, that can happen anywhere and has happened, you know, at other places. But he was impressed at the time at how, you know, happy everybody seemed, and everything was clean, and, you know, the city was, you know, by Latin American standards, it was right up there with Buenos Aires. It was functioning very well.
No, not so much.
They always, their oil industry, their oil, I can't remember, I don't know the name of the oil company, but it was pretty well respected internationally. Because I remember when I worked for Accenture, I worked in the research.
I'll get the name of it. It's some big long. It's like Pemex in Mexico.
Yeah. Their oil industry was very well respected, very technically adept, like the Brazilian and the Mexican oil industry. So, and that was you know, all those technocrats left.
Well, so I mean, I guess I wish I had more of a idea of how the day goes by for Venezuelan population right now, but I really don't. I mean, I've never been to a place like that. So, the name of the company is PDVSA. It's Petroleos de Venezuela SA. Responsible for exploration, production, refining, and export of oil and gas, dominating the sector since nationalization. Well, international players like Chevron, he's the only one from here still there, I guess. Russia's Rosneft and China's CNPC operate through joint ventures. While U.S. refiner Citgo handles significant downstream operations, all facing major production cuts, blah, 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 due to export blockades and U.S. sanctions. So we got a hell of a lot of work to do down there if we're going to straighten this place out. You think we're up for it?
Oh, you know, when you know, we'll be really up for it for the first 2 weeks, and then after somebody starts getting killed, and you know, we put another $1 trillion into another forever war. I don't think so.
Are any excuse my voice, but are any of these places savable? I mean, really? I guess are we savable? But Argentina was...
I'm sorry. When you say these places, you're talking about Venezuela specifically.
No, I'm saying Argentina in 1920 was considered one of the most dramatically growing countries in the world. Where have they gone in 100 years? A little bit. But, I mean, all of a sudden they just... Somehow they all backtrack. I mean, Nicaragua, the guy who lived next door to me in Notre Dame as a freshman, his parents were worried about getting arrested and the place was... controlled by some bunch of thugs, and is it any better? I mean, it doesn't seem like there's any progress, does there?
Well, Perón and his ilk, you know, have done, you know, tremendous damage to Argentina, and the back and forth, you know, the pendulum swings after Perón, and you know, the ruthless military control. I mean, all of these things are the ways vacuums get filled with, you know, stuff that is, you know, awful by human rights standards, and well, what Chile. Happened in Argentina in the 70s and 80s is just horrific. But it's somewhat stabilized now, and you know, but it's always in flux. And you know, I suspect Venezuela isn't in any different situation, because it's, you know, now you have a vacuum at the top, and you've got an extremely disaffected population who's looking for a fast solution, which is not easy to come up with, especially if you're the outsider. So there's always the possibility of, you know, not fine-tuning this enough, and you make a situation more volatile rather than less volatile. So I hope somebody has considered the stakes here.
Well, we just put a guy in charge. What is it? Today's his first day. What does he do?
Well, we have the existing VP in charge, theoretically.
Okay, but now is he a Maduro guy, or is he? I mean, who are all these people?
I'm going to tell you the initial reaction from the VP that has assumed government control in name only is that no, we will defend our sovereignty. It was no. Thank God, Maduro's gone. Thank you, America. No, it wasn't that at all. And the other question is too: is what are we going to do all these generals that basically made their living with Maduro? I mean, what do we?
Well, there's a lot of list of things to do, I'm thinking.
Well, the military ran the narcotics end of this, I think. So you got to think about how that's going to be dismantled without military friction. So
why do we keep thinking the narcotics problem is it's coming from some other place? We're the ones that are using it here.
Well, if we were so hot on drug interdiction, well, how come we're not sinking Chinese freighters? That's where the precursor chemicals are all coming from. So how come we didn't tell? Well, how come we haven't tried to arrest Xi Jinping?
So he's a little tougher.
Say it again.
He's a little tougher.
Oh yeah, I mean he's got a little bit bigger military. So I mean this is where it all, in my mind, go after Canada for the drug. I mean, 10% of the fentanyl comes from through Canada. Give me a break.
What did the guy in Saturday Night Live say? It's not even 2 butts full.
So I was just looking up something about Argentina because you were right, Tom and John. But I can remember in 1880, I can remember reading about 1880, turn of the century, 1910. It was expected, it wasn't quite known whether Argentina would be the new world power or the United States was. Argentina was a very, very wealthy country. And basically, it was political. That's what really put it in. The excessive borrowing, political instability, protectionist policies, is just, and they've had it for years. I mean, John, you said it well. Perón put in his quasi-socialist policies there, and the country never, the country has never been able to come back.
Well, John, what do you think? John Lee. You guys are both named John. That's a tough one. What does this mean for what's going on with China and Taiwan and stuff? I'm looking at the deployments of U.S. aircraft carriers, and we've only got we've got like 10 or 11 of these things, and they can't be out there forever. And you got to bring them in every 6-8 months and spend like a year putting them all back together. We've got Indo-Pacific, Theodore Roosevelt and the Vinson, that's two. Middle East, Red Sea, we got the Abraham Lincoln, there's three. The Dwight D. Eisenhower, that's four. Global transit aboard George Washington moving to Japan from the Pacific. Well, that is the Pacific. Now we're up to five. And Gerald R. Ford is in Marseille. So we got 6 of the 11 deployed.
Which is unsustainable.
That's about as far. That's about as stretched as we can be.
The way it used to be, I remember my uncle was a captain in the Navy, is that we would have 9. Okay, we had 9, and three were being refurbished at all time. 3 were in training, and 3 were deployed. So it's now gone to a 50-50 deployed, and then and then when they break. They run the hell out of these things.
Oh, yeah.
But, that the whole Taiwan, I was doing some reading because I do follow it. I frankly do like their prime minister. I mean, she is quite the hard ass. But, she basically restated the Japanese position for the last 2 prime ministers where, it's going to be a big issue. It's going to be an existential crisis for Japan if China invades Taiwan. There's Japanese territory that's a whopping 70 miles from Taiwan. So I'm not buying, you know, in the Japanese were very disappointed that Trump didn't come out in support of that, because he played both ends against it. And she said these, and she said this in November. The Chinas have reacted. You know, the only country that's not gone up against, you know, has not condemned this has been Korea, because of the trade issues they have with China. But this too, so China went and tried to ban Chinese tourists in Japan, and the Japanese loved it because they have such an over-tourism problem, you know. And let's face it, the Chinese tourists in Asia are basically the American tourists in the late 50s, 60s, you know. We did not have a lot of cultural affinity to countries we would visit, but you know, this is going to pass. But the other thing too is that we did the same month give Taiwan the largest arms deal that we ever have, $11 billion, and that pissed off the Chinese too. The CCP has put themselves in a box where they said that Taiwan, and they use this for internal purposes, they've said Taiwan is, you know, it is fundamental part of China, all, you know, all these things. I was looking at the history of Taiwan, and they were technically part of China for around 200 years. But within those 200 years, it was nothing but rebellions and very, very light touch, so it wasn't like, you know, Chongqing. And then the Japanese took it over at the turn of the century. So, I think no one has basically said this. We will never allow Taiwan to be taken over by the Chinese.
How are we going to stop them?
What do you need? What is success here? Because 90%, almost 90% of the high-end chips in the world come from Taiwan. We will never let it happen, ever.
Well, I mean, what does that mean?
You know, we will basically, you know, we will put every aircraft carrier, which we already have, over there. We'll make it so that it's such a military, the cost will be so high from a military standpoint. You know, missiles can go both ways, Tom. You know, we can sink their ships and planes and knock down their planes just as well as they can do it to us. But I do not think we will, from a geopolitical standpoint, ever allow China to take over Taiwan. If it was a very light touch, maybe, but we will not allow. I mean, chips are more important than oil.
Well, sure they are, right? But I'm saying,
that's my rant. John Flanagan.
John, what do you think? I mean, it's all what cost. I mean, how stretched are we? There was a story. This has to be 25 years ago, the U.S. of A., used to have 16 aircraft carriers. And you went out on for 6 months. Whole new crew. I mean, you know, the master sergeants and those guys they stayed, but they weren't lifers. But most people, they were the lifers. Most people weren't. So you went out with a new crew. The ship had been totally redone. It was like brand new. And you went out and you got your air wing, and you spent 6 months out. And if you were a captain, they could be 6 months out and not have a death. You were on your way to admiral. Thing would come back basically limping. Every elevator had to be done. These things are 24 hours for 6 months working. Every elevator, every catapult, everything in the place needed to be like torn out and redone. And then it was all the people on that ship basically were out of the Navy, most of them. So they're gone. You have some people are on shore. It goes someplace, goes through this whole routine. It takes like a year to bring the thing back up to brand new status. And then all of a sudden the contractors and everybody around it. Then you bring out a whole new crew, not a whole new crew, but a pretty big new crew. It takes like 6 months to train them. You have all these shakedown cruises again, and then you're off for another 6 months. Well, when you go from, that was based on having four carriers at sea all the time, one in the Mediterranean, one in the Pacific, and one in the Indian Ocean, and whatever. And when you go to 12 carriers, if you decide now, okay, we still want four people out there, if you do the math, that now becomes an 8 or 9 month time out there, which is really pushing it for somebody to be at sea for 8 or 9 months. I mean, you're really pushing crew and machine. Well, now we're down to, you know, 11 or 10. And if we still want 4 or 5 out there, you're starting to press some people. I mean, we don't have the backup, I'll use that term, that we used to have. I mean, not saying we should, but there's probably some of these that can't move for a few months, right? I mean, the Enterprise we just got rid of. And I'm not, you know, the military genius here, but the numbers don't lie. I mean, if we're going to put 1 or 2 in the Caribbean, I think we have 1, and, you know, and if China wants to surround or blockade Taiwan, I don't know that right now, what are we going to do? Start knocking off every one of those ships?
John, I agree that we're not going to let it happen. And I think the ace, you know, in the hole here for the U.S. and its allies is that they don't have to have a nuclear threat against China to enforce its, you know, desires to keep Taiwan free. All they have to do is have a missile attack on the Three Gorges Dam. And China knows this too. And that will, I mean, not only wipe out millions of people, but it will accelerate all of the anti-government, you know, hatred that's been brewing in China for a while and make the Communist Party unsustainable there as the controlling interest. And it's going to, you know, wipe out, you know, the economy, at least, you know, for a couple of years. And then what, you know, how do they replace that dam if, you know, the rivers are completely unrestrained? I think this is, you know, maybe something that is, you know, the biggest protection for Taiwan is something that doesn't require anybody to exercise this nuclear capacity here, but just to attack a piece of infrastructure that has become, you know, so symbolic.
And we're not going to do that. We're going to go take over Greenland.
Oh, well, you know, that too, but...
Yeah. But, you know, it time to go back. John, I agree. I saw an article just about that.
Yeah, and I know the Chinese know this, and they know it's vulnerability.
I think we continue to watch the same YouTube political pundits.
to the extent we can trust any of this stuff, I guess.
Yeah, but Tom, you know, the war for Taiwan is not going to be 1 year long. Okay, the invasion is going to be, you know, it's going to be a short, you know, first of all, it's not like Ukraine in the sense, you know, okay, we cross a river and then now we're in the plains of Ukraine, the agricultural area of Ukraine. You know, you've got a 100-mile stretch of ocean at least, maybe 200 miles. It's not an easy place to send ships over. Yes, you've got planes here, but, you know, we've got relatively good anti-aircraft systems. I mean, that can take down these so-called hypersonic missiles. So, you know, yeah, we'll be stretched, but I have noticed that we have put a lot more and Trump has put, I was just reading this, Trump has actually put more support into Taiwan than is commonly thought.
Well, I think he has too, yeah.
So he's basically, but I'm going to go back to my thing. I feel that, you know, the people that are making policy decisions, there is just, you know, we would love to go back 20 years ago when, let's just ignore the issue and pretend that reality, you know, the reality in the ground doesn't really matter and just go have a drink afterwards. Well, after 2017, and John Flanagan, I don't know if you've read about this, but, you know, it all changed then. It changed at the Chinese Communist Party National Congress in 2017 when basically Xi Jinping, he did two things. First, he put, you know, Sun Tzu-Mao, the first guy Sun Tzu-Mao, put his name on the CCP ideology, but also he said that, you know, we are going to surpass the United States. We will be the global how do you say this word? Hegemony, whatever. So it started then, and that's when they got very aggressive about Taiwan, and that's when our policymakers, all these characters that, you know, just love making money in China, woke up. So it started to go down. We started to really have, that really is what woke up American policymakers. And by the way, the Chinese really didn't expect that. They said, under the breath, this was more for internal consumption. Why are you guys acting like this? But we did. But I will tell you right now, China's got immense vulnerability.
Yeah.
Since that, all it takes is one major country to recognize Taiwan, and everything falls apart about this Taiwan issue. They won't even know what to do. Can you imagine what would happen if Japan, the United States, and the Philippines recognized Taiwan? They would not know what to do about that. We've already got missiles on the northern end of the Philippines, which is about 300 miles from Taiwan. In Japan, so it's not just us. Like I said, the closest Japanese island, and it's admittedly a very small island, Okinawa is about 300 miles away. The smallest island is like 70 miles
away. What I'm trying to dig out of you guys, which I think I'm getting, is how many fronts can we deal with? Do we really have to piss off Denmark right now? The last I looked, our country is broke. And this guy's spending more money than all the rest of the guys ever did.
I agree with that.
I mean, how many fronts do we want open? I mean, he's going to. I mean, we're talking about starting a war against Iran if they're too nasty to their demonstrators. Well, I don't want them being nasty to their demonstrators either.
This is where it all falls. I mean, I agree with you, Tom. What in God's name are we going to do to help the demonstrators in Iran? Do we understand how ruthless the IRC can be? I mean, if they had to kill 500,000 Iranians in the street, they wouldn't think twice about it. What are we going to do?
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah, I mean,
your greatest strength is to have your fiscal house in order. I mean, we have, and to have this vast defense capability, and we sort of do, but it's kind of shallow. I mean, it's not near as deep as it used to be. I don't think.
Well, I don't know if you. I didn't bring this up. Yeah, I did. Last time I was on the show, I brought this up, and I don't know. It really impacted me. I don't know why it did, but John Flanagan, when we canceled the Constellation class being built in Wisconsin, we could not. Now that was our fault. We couldn't. You can't get welders, but we also the Navy screwed up, and I agree with you, Tom. It is shallow. If you look at there is an amendment to the budget. I'll forward this to you guys if you want. There was an analyst, he talked about the amendment to the budget. It was about, a couple hundred billion dollars. And a substantial amount of the defense budget, amendment to the defense budget, I apologize, was basically for reinvigoration of the industrial base. It was a considerable amount.
Sure it is.
Just to reinvigorate the industrial.
We've allowed. I don't know if you've got it, Mr. Lee, but Mr. Flanagan has the thing loose then around how many combinations and mergers there've been in the defense industry in the last 40 years. It is disgusting to look at.
Yeah, but we encourage that. The post Cold War Defense Department encouraged the encouraged it. So, we scored our own goal on that one.
Well, we have a people in charge, and I'm not just going to blame this on Trump because it's about a 30-year. It probably started with Dutch. We have people that are supposed to enforce monopoly laws that love monopolies. How's that for a? It's like putting the fox in charge of the hen house, right? These guys love every merger, and yet they're supposed to be enforcing anti-merger legislation, Mr. Flanagan. You're the attorney. How does that work?
Well, we don't have to worry about consistency anymore.
I don't know what you do. I mean, we had the place in Wisconsin that was making the all kind of ships they were making.
Constellation frigates.
Yeah, we ended up laying off 90 people because we went back from 3 to 1 or something like that. I mean, we got, 6 shipyards left? How long does it, how do you build a shipyard? I mean, for God's sake. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, it even gets worse. How many naval architects do you, Tom, or John, or Jimmy, how many do you know?
I've never even heard of one.
Yeah. Okay, I knew one. He was my uncle. He was a captain in the Navy. We don't, I mean, it's gone so far off, you know, the expertise we have. And I think what I'm trying to do is agree with you that it's very shallow. We don't have, the only place that, I was looking at this, there's only, I think, three universities in the U.S. that have naval architecture, marine architecture.
Who would they be?
I think MIT does. I think there's one in New Orleans, and I can't remember where the other one is, Northwestern or Carnegie Mellon.
Well, how many guys do you need if you only got six shipyards? Not very many.
Well, yeah, you need actually quite a few, because you know what? You got to have people running the ships too. You know, the chief engineering officer for an aircraft carrier, that is not a, it's not an unsophisticated job, right?
You need a couple. No.
I mean, it's.
How many moving parts you think there are in an aircraft carrier? Good Lord. A couple of million?
I think it's interesting that, you know, the two most recent strikes against Iran, with Soleimani, you know, taking him out in a surgical attack, and the same with the attack on Iran's nuclear facilities, that this seems to be the new template for, you know, substituting surgical attacks like that for gunboat diplomacy or blockades or anything else that requires a huge investment of manpower and money and, you know, international intrigue with closing off ports or canals or points of access or whatever. And I mean, that was the old model, and I think there seems to be a decision at some point that, yeah, we're very light and it's pretty thin, but we're going to make the most of what we have and not have to rely on the more cumbersome, you know, methods that we used to rely on. So I don't see, you know, right now with Iran, for example, what we're going to do if this thing just dissolves into chaos, or if the leaders escape, you know, with the people nipping at their rear ends. And now you got the demonstrators calling for the return of the Shah's dynasty. I mean, if you live long enough, you see everything you thought could never happen again to just come right around, right on schedule. You know, I don't know what that will look like, or what's going to precipitate it, but I think it's inevitable at some point, and it's inevitable in China too, that there's going to be an unraveling of all this stuff. And I hope there's some, you know, deep, you know, study going on about where we're going to fit into these vacuums that are created. I mean, we had to do the thing in Venezuela, I guess, you know, because the timing was exquisite and we couldn't delay.
Why couldn't we delay? I mean, if you
let the Chinese get a foothold and they get, you know, this is what you
it sounds like. It sounds like it's been a really bad deal for them too.
Well, they'll go stuck. But I mean, they were looking at this as, you know, gaining a foothold in the way that Russia could in, you know, 1962 with Cuba. And, you know, this is a different kind of response. You know, we didn't talk about a blockade this time. We just went and took out the leader, which we weren't willing to do or able to do in Cuba in the 60s. And I don't know if we are today either, but I guess if you could do it in Venezuela and make it look good or good enough to make everybody else wonder if I'm next on the list, maybe you can accomplish something without having to actually do it.
Well, I mean, I'm absolutely not a Bible thumper, but when you, the one line was, a few lines I remember from all the years we had to study it, you know, was it, he's without sin cast the first stone. And I was hearing somebody on Fox or somebody ranting and raving about, we need to do this to Mexico because of the drugs coming out of there. And I'm not all that happy about that, but what would we think if Mexico went and kidnapped Trump and said the reason why they did it is because every cartel down there is armed with guns that were made here? Does Mexico even have a gun manufacturer? I don't think they do. Maybe they do. I mean, we're the one to arm these people, right? I mean, what about gun trafficking in the world? Now, of course, other people in the world make guns now, too, but for a while, they're mostly all were here, right?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I was wrong. about the number of naval architecture schools. There's 7, not 3.
Okay.
And also, so that includes the United States Naval Academy. So there you go.
Bill Moriarty was on a while ago talking about, and Bill was a retired civil engineer that matriculated over into water treatment plants. He did some highways and stuff here when he was very young, but basically went into water treatment. And I don't think civil engineering is a hot. I bet at Notre Dame or Purdue or Illinois, people aren't running down the hall into getting in those classes. Everybody wants computer engineering and God knows what else. And you don't want to tell anybody else how to live their life, but I'm not so sure that's a horrible life, building bridges and doing pretty neat stuff and getting paid pretty well for it. I mean, there's some travel involved, but Bill says it's not a destination career now either.
But it hasn't been that way for a long time.
You look at Chicago and the manufacturing, and Mr. Flanagan and I have talked about this, a lot. How do you tell somebody? I mean, Bill was probably the most articulate when he said, when he was growing up, and your parents, and his dad was a fireman, but if your parents were working in an industrial kind of place, whether they were in the factory or in the office or whatever, and you see these places one after another screw their people and leave, the last thing on your mind was to have your kids in an industry like that. It wasn't so much that the job itself wasn't that, being a welder is, not good enough. The welder could be laid off 12 months at a time, because somebody moved or didn't have a contract or whatever. And then all these companies here basically screwed everybody out of their pension. So the taste of having any kind of blue-collar manufacturing for people, it's just not there. Unless you're, maybe somebody who came from another country or whatever. But, and now, yet those are all fine careers. Building ships, I think it'd be kind of fun, wouldn't it?
As you were talking on the show a couple of weeks ago, Tom, that industry was kind of handed over to China.
Yeah.
So, and I think that took its toll on the military's interest and, the time it takes, by when you get, a design in place for a carrier or something else, and then putting down the keel and then building the thing and testing it. We're talking 10 years probably, if not more at this point. And it isn't just because we can't do that stuff, but because we've gotten stale about doing it. And the Chinese have been, running every which way with it. And, for civilian ships as well as for military ships, I think we're playing catch up now, and it's our own fault in a lot of ways. So,
I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but you're talking about shipbuilding. So we've had the Korean shipbuilders come in until we probably arrest their workers too. Come in and basically purchase some of our shipyards, but
yeah, the Philadelphia one, isn't it? It's got a new name now, a Korean name, I think.
I think you're right. I think it is the Philadelphia. So they came in because, the Defense Department really made it attractive for them to come in and do it, to bring expertise back in. The story they said, we can currently build 3 Arleigh Burkes a year. And so those are the mainstay, those are the backbone of the naval fleet. Highly competent, highly capable destroyers. And the Koreans said, we can build 5. We'll build 5 for you a year. This is a country of what, 50, 60 million people.
I think though, Jan, you as a matter of fact, those that don't know, Jan and I met at Pullman. If somebody were to say, I don't know how many people are left from Pullman, if somebody would corral the boat of us, as they say on the south side, and say, we want to build the next generation of RTA cars. We want to build here in Chicago. You two guys, get it going. You know what, John? Trading the market is easier than doing that. How the hell would we even start?
What we have to do? We'd have to go overseas, and we'd have to get a partner to come in and show us how to do it.
Yeah. The same partner that we taught 40 years ago. The same partner that we taught.
Yeah, let's. Well, they were pretty good 40 years ago, too. The French and the German train manufacturers were making you know, high-speed cars back then when we weren't. But, you know, the we would have to go get a Japanese, German, or French partner to show us how to do
it. That is so disgusting. But I'm saying just in terms of putting the plant together, getting enough machines in there to do, and we're talking something that's 1/100th, maybe 1/1000th as complicated as an aircraft carrier. And I would say by the time we found the place, by the time we got the cranes together, by the time we got some people together, by the time we, I think we're 3 years away from even going out to bid on a contract.
Yeah, yeah.
And then who, name me the fool that would give us a performance bond. Who would that guy be, Mr. T? Who the hell would give us a performance bond and something we never did before?
Yeah, no. It's I can remember people talking about the hollowing out of the industrial base. But then again, our skill set, our engineering skill set did go in a different direction, okay? It went to, before that, you know, it was hardcore. I mean, if you were anybody in engineering, you were going to go into electrical engineering, mechanical or electrical, but, you know, really around the IT industry. And then that shifted about 40 years ago to software. So that's where our talent really went.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I won't go into the whole thing, because, Tom, do you remember, maybe John, you do too, or Jimmy, you know, who would you rather be, a lawyer or an engineer? Everybody wanted to become a lawyer. No one wanted to become an engineer. I mean, that was back in the 80s.
Yeah.
So, you know, so
everybody saw it shrinking, John. I mean, every place, if your dad worked in a steel company, guess what? He probably got screwed out of his pension and got tossed out. I mean, name me anybody who had a good outcome in any of those places. Look at all the guys at Pullman. There was like 1,000 people. What happened to them?
Right. Yep.
I mean, what would possess one of those people to want to put his kid in any industry that built stuff? When all they do is go out of business. I mean, am I right or not? I mean, you look for something. I mean, one thing for sure, we seem to always need more lawyers, Mr. Flanagan.
Yeah, well, that's why I had a career change.
Yeah. So, okay, now that we've not solved the problem. Now what are we going to do? What are we going to trade here? We got
Gentlemen, I'm going to step off. I'll talk to everybody later on today.
All right, bud.
Good hearing from you, John.
So, John, right, we got Exxon or Chevron up 980. We got Caterpillar up a little bit. Individual stocks, we got NVIDIA up. Well, NVIDIA's always up, 277. Not much going on here, considering all the stuff that has happened. We've got silver with a pretty good rally, 6812 on the SLV. Gold is up again. We've still got our dollar issues. None of this stuff has affected anything that we talk about. And we still are talking about, are we going to have some kind of a tax increase here? I don't see how we can't. Not that I want one. The guy in California that said something about a wealth tax is still getting, he's getting abused from every side of the world. Yet, you know, as Jimmy would say, why do you rob the banks? Well, that's where the money is, right?
Just raise the subway fare in New York City, right?
Yeah. We have when you look at the issues in this country, and people's salaries not keeping up with really anything in my opinion. I can't even. I don't really want to go visit. What is it like living in Iran, living in Venezuela? I mean, what do you make per day? Do you even make enough to buy bread? I mean, what is 80% of the people are in poverty, and yet everybody supposedly has a job. Well, I'm going to say BS on that. How could you possibly have, what does a job pay? Nothing?
Well, you know, I think it's probably like, to some extent, there were a lot of people in Chicago who, you know, technically maybe didn't have jobs during the Depression, or not during Depression, but during Prohibition, but were in on gravy train, you know, and were able to follow the proceeds of, you know, the whole booze racket, and have enough to live on and do things for the mob and you'll get protection too. And not, you didn't need a steady job. You probably did better by being a friend of the mob or being related to the mob than you ever could in an honest job. And I think that's probably, you know, how people have gotten by in a place like Venezuela, where, you know, if the military is, you know, running a drug trade and, you know, parceling out its, you know, booty among the people who are preferred by blood or by marriage or, you know, friends or cronies or other crooked businesses, people have the illusion of getting by, and there's money flowing to them, but it's not, nothing is being,
what is the money? I mean, is there, what is,
well,
there,
it's, you know, whatever's being made on, you know, on traffic.
I mean, is their currency even viable?
Well, yeah, well, it's, no. I mean, that, and this is unsustainable, of course. This is not how you can grow anything, and all it does is devolve into, you know, a more and more desperate situation. And that does, I think, you know, why so many people have fled Venezuela, because they can't make a living. And these are people who, you know, maybe were, you know, educated, and in a different climate or different time, they would have done just fine. But they're shut out from any kind of, you know, job opportunity, despite their skill sets. So what can you do but leave? And, you know, you have this diaspora of people all around. And some of them are rich, some of them are poor, but I think all of them are pretty unhappy. So, I mean, this is, I think, an ever-growing class of people, and it's not just in Venezuela, of people who, if they have the resources, get out and go somewhere else and hope that, you know, they can stay there long enough to, you know, build some kind of a life and not look back very much. So, you know, it's bad when a country like Venezuela this happens to, because it at one time was, you know, growing. It was improving. It was kind of a shining light to the rest of Latin America. And it's the,
well, they've got more oil reserves than anybody else in the world. So it's not like they don't have anything.
Right. Yeah. Right. But, you know, that's the case with a lot of the African states too. They got minerals up the wazoo, but, you know, nothing works. So,
well, they all seem to have one thing in common. They got a bunch of people that are running the place and stealing all the money.
Right. Yeah. And that's, you know, the kleptocracy. So,
well, our buddy Wayne sent me this thing kind of a while ago, and it was pretty interesting. There's always somebody in the world who does something, right? They're a group that keeps track of leaders in countries that have stolen money from people. And some of the people, by the way, Trump is making huge headway on their list, but it's not something for this second. They have Putin stealing like $1 trillion since he's been there. I'm not so sure that's that far off to you. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but you wonder what exactly is going on with these guys, and you know, but they have all these places like in Sudan and places like that where you think there's no dough. And they'll have a guy who stole $4 billion or something out of Sudan, and you go, how the hell could somebody do that? And yet, evidently, these guys get deals where they just siphon all this stuff off. I mean, every one of these countries seems to have a group like that. I mean, we have some of that here, but nothing like that.
Well, and you know, the thing that I think has helped make that possible is that a lot of these are countries that have really never lost their tribal population, so that you can't really, you know, worry very much about the people, you know, revolting against you when they've got enough, you know, antagonisms among the own elements of your population, where they're never going to turn and look at the ruler and saying you're the one who's got to go and not the tribe next door. So this is how these people can stoke all these, you know, tribal conflicts and distract the populations from who's really looting the place. And it's kind of been the model in a lot of places. It's, you know, it's working pretty well for the people at the top.
Well, I mean, for that to happen, and I'm not, you know, you're always going to get to blame people, but for that to happen, other people have to allow it. You know, and I mean, one of these days, she'll come downtown again, but I'd like you to meet her. A friend of mine, and she's has done work with the United Nations and all kinds of other people. to do something in some of these areas. And, you know, it's a long story, but bottom line is they will actually get, in order to do something in one of these areas, you have to feed some money to the dictator. And they do. So, you know, you're sort of like, for every time you do something for $100, you got to give the dictator like a dime in a Swiss bank account or something. You wonder if the rest of the world, just to make this sort of happen, and again, this is we'll talk about this someday when we don't have dancing stuff coming on, but, we have this Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. These people like Maduro wouldn't be able to be in business if other countries didn't give them the dough.
All right. Well, that was the model really for ward politics in Chicago. I mean, Anton Cermak was a reformer, you know, by Chicago standards, but he was still called Tony 10% Cermak. He got his 10% from everything going on in his ward. So, and people are happy to pay that if they think that the rewards, you know, make it worthwhile and that they're getting the bargain, the deal. So once they think they're getting cheated, of course, it's a different matter. And then you got, you know, real trouble. But until that happens, you can keep people placated enough to just simmer them down. And you know, they think they're the lucky ones here, that they're looting you. And of course, it's the other way around. They're being looted.
Well, yeah, you never know who's the one actually getting screwed. What do you say we go to a quick break and then we'll bring. Do we have time or we're time? Are we? We're.
I think Nancy's on. Yeah, I think.
All right. Well, why don't we go to a quick break now and come back and we'll have some time with Nance. Be right back. Stocks. SP futures up 12. Nasdaq futures up 138. Pretty quiet considering all this stuff. We got a couple oil companies up. We got Chevron up. We've got gold and silver up, and the market up a little bit. We'll be right back.
How would you like to save money on nearly all your prescription drugs? We've set up a special toll-free number for the RX Outreach Program. They're a nonprofit company whose mission it is to make prescription drugs more affordable to the masses. They don't take insurance, and in many cases, your prescriptions are even cheaper than your co-pays. They carry thousands of different prescription drugs, so whatever you're taking, there's a good chance they have it. No coupons are required, and this is not a discount card. It is pure savings on your prescription drugs. They specialize in generic meds for any chronic health needs you have. Call with your prescription and find out for free how little you can pay for your prescription drugs. Remember, we don't take insurance, so call right now.
800-586-9885. 800-586-9885. 800-586-9885. That's 800-586-9885.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-639-8620. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not, it'll be towed away for free, and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car. And as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-639-8620. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-639-8620. That's 1-800-639-8620.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Here, right now.
We're back.
Lower North Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Jim Lawler on the board. SP Futures up 1375. Nasdaq Futures up 149. This is after the ousting of Maduro out of Venezuela, and he's in New York, evidently now. Going to be arraigned today. Or tomorrow, I think today. So the market doesn't seem to have a problem with it. I don't see why they would, actually. But DAX up 165.7%, FTSE up 25.2%, CAC around down 25 cents. So they're unchanged. They're not celebrating. Over in Asia, Nikkei, now these guys were closed for like 3 days. So they're all like $1,500. That's 3%. But now they were closed. Hang Seng up 8 points. Call that one flat. Shanghai up 54, which is, we'll have to get Mr. Flanagan's comment on that. That's up 1.4%. Now, why they might be playing a little catch up on the Hang Seng as well, because Hang Seng was up the last couple of days. Mm-hmm. Through a way of review on Friday, S&P was up 12, NASDAQ was down 6, so Friday wasn't much of a day. Bonds unchanged at 4.18, 10 year. The Bund down 1 basis point, 2.88. Japan up 4 basis points, 2.12. That's getting up there. They're almost pushing Europe here, which we never would have guessed. Oil. Up 40 cents, I mean up 45 cents, 57.77, so not much going on there either. I think the infrastructure in Venezuela is in pretty bad shape from everything I read, so it's not going to be an instant turnaround. Trump's looking for people to go in and revitalize the what has kind of been an infrastructure that's been led to fall apart. Their exports are way down. Matter of fact, even the China has lent them a lot of money to keep that up, and they're supposed to get paid in oil. They haven't been paid in oil enough, so they've been getting kind of reneged on by Venezuela as well. The U.S. oil company that's still active down there is Chevron, and those are the guys that are up $10. They're all $9.50. The rest of the companies here, not so much. Gold up $94. Wow, $44.24. Silver up almost $4, $74.99. So, and copper up 22 cents. It's 4% in copper. That's a lot. So these things are to the moon here. FX, foreign exchange, 116.6. Dollar's actually up a little bit. And the British pound is 134.2. So those are the lowest those guys have been in a little bit. Crypto, up $1,400, 92,709. They were 82,000 a week or so ago, so they've had a big rally there as well. Jimmy, we have Force Traffic, Weather, Sports. Bears in, backed in.
Bears did lose. Okay, and weather in Phoenix. It's 54 degrees with a high of 70, and it will be sunny with some high clouds. In Chicago, we are currently at 32 degrees, and we will have a high of 42. In traffic, which should be getting back to normal now that the weekend is over, the inbound Kennedy is from Montrose at 15. Double check that. That doesn't seem right. No, it is. Inbound Edens from the Jane Byrne Interchange is 29. The inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is 22. The inbound Dan Ryan is 19. In regards to sports, yes, we now have the Bears lost, and we are now going on to the playoffs. So let's take a look at who we have. We are going to be playing the Packers. And the Eagles will play the 49ers. The Panthers will play the Rams. The Steelers will play the Texans. The Jaguars will play the Bills. And the Patriots will play the Chargers. Back to you, Chief.
A little bit of sports. Nance, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I know you're a Bear fan and a big-time gambler. And these sports things. Did you see what happened in the Packer game?
I saw the Packers lose.
They were, guys like you and Flanagan, we'll see if you're suspicious enough, as I am. They were 13.5-point dogs because they weren't going to play anybody, right? So they're losing 16-0, and like in the last minute, they kick a field goal to lose by only 13 in cover.
Interesting.
Strategy, yeah.
That's interesting. I don't know if you're a Packer fan, you probably like that, a little bit if you're a Packer wagerer. Before we get back to the mundane stuff of the market and everything, Jimmy's buddy Bill Cowher was on one of the shows the other day, the former coach of Pittsburgh, and they were asking him about the last game, if your team's already in and all this stuff, and whether you should play for positioning and all those kinds of things. And I've never seen him this adamant I mean, I'm a Bill Cowher fan. He was a pretty good coach, and he's a pretty good announcer. He was so adamant. He goes, "All I care about is the health of my team." He goes, "If I'm already in, I don't care who I play. I don't care where I play, whether it's home or away. I just want my guys healthy. And if I have to go a week and lose a spot in the standings, or I have to go on the road versus be at home," he goes, "I don't care. I want my team healthy." What do you? I'm not surprised at that outlook, but I was really surprised how adamant he was about it. Are you guys?
That's refreshing.
Yeah. He goes, nothing beats health. Because I'd rather go on the road and play a better team if everybody's healthy.
I agree with the philosophy. I'm just surprised somebody said it.
I know.
More than anything.
Well, the Packers didn't play. They played like no starters, right, Jimmy?
Packers did not play any starters.
Yeah, I mean they were like nobody, and I watched all these other guys just kind of. I never saw as big a hitting game as that Pittsburgh Raven game last night. And I don't know if John, the kid from Notre Dame, Hamilton, he's on the Ravens. He somehow got hurt. Didn't look like he wasn't carried off or anything. But he's the best safety in football. I mean, he was that good when he was at Notre Dame. He was a man among boys. And the minute he went out of the game, all of a sudden Rodgers went down the field for two touchdowns. Pretty scary. I mean, you lose one or two guys and really key people when you're playing these really good teams. It just shows right away, doesn't it?
Makes all the difference.
Yeah, it makes all the difference. And anyway, the Bears didn't look like they had anybody hurt yesterday, so that part's good. So, Nance, what's going on in your world? All this stuff going on with the tenures kind of in the same spot. So mortgages have come down just a little bit, but I don't see how they come down much more unless the 10-year moves again. Do you?
No, I don't. I really don't.
We're down to what, 6.2 or something?
It depends, but yeah, I mean, it's right in there. All the people that were waiting for it to get to 4 and 3, I just think those days are gone, and they're going to be gone, and that's it. You guys were talking about that we took this man out of Venezuela. What do you see happening today?
I think we're in a holding pattern. I don't know that. I mean, the place was not being run very properly, and so the fix, if there is one. I mean, in the long run, I think that oil industry might get back on track. But I mean, if the infrastructure is so screwed up, if there's no buses or trains or anything running, I don't know that putting a new leader in helps the world or even their world tomorrow, does it? I mean, that guy's not a good guy. I mean, there's no question. But how far away do you? I mean, it's not like there's going to be a surge in oil hitting the market today, is there, Jen?
No.
I mean, they're already. I mean, Nancy, I don't know if you were listening earlier, but China has lent them a whole bunch of money. They're supposed to get paid in oil. Oil production is down so low that they're not even getting their payment. Are we going to be? Are we going to try and stiff China on this? By the way, there was another dictator that did this. I'm not saying we're going to do it, but when a lot of people in the U.S. during the 20s bought German bearer bonds. With gold-backed bearer bonds with the gold in certain banks in Europe. Banks are still there. The companies are still there. When Hitler came in, he said, "We're not paying any of those back." And they didn't. You know, I hope we don't say that Venezuela doesn't have to pay China back if it's a legitimate loan. But
well, Trump did say China will get its oil or something to that effect. It's not clear if he was speaking, in terms of the long-term access China expected or as payment for what it had done or something else. But I think it will make the Chinese think, well, what about the other stuff we thought we were entitled to, too?
Well, they're not going to get the influence, but at least if they gave somebody $50 million, they should get $50 million of oil, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the way the other oil companies felt about Chavez and Maduro.
Well, I really hope Trump does that, he probably will. So I'm going to say he probably will. So
yeah, I think just for the sake of keeping some kind of peace with China, because I think this really was aimed at China. Probably, this is a way of making it clear that we're not going to see them get stiffed in this if we can help it. So that's just very smart politics.
Well, I mean, we've spent the last 100 and how many years making sure we're nice to people that have oil. Why shouldn't China do the same thing, right? I mean,
right.
So, Nance, I mean, as of now, I mean, I don't know what changes today necessarily. I don't know what it means in the. I mean, is their currency all of a sudden get better? Are they what it means in the Bitcoin world? Because I think there's a lot of Bitcoin use down there. Because I don't know what their currency's doing. Their currency was worthless pretty much. So I think it's going to take a couple of months to shake out, don't you, Jen?
Yeah, I don't foresee any big movements because I think nobody really knows, and everybody's hoping that this is an opportunity of some kind that we're not used to seeing, and we're going to take it slow and not expect this to be resolved in a day or a week or a month. So maybe that's a good thing. People kind of sit back and wait.
Actually, Nancy, you should have been on earlier when we asked the question, okay, you got 80% of the people live in poverty, your currency's no good, your oil production facilities are not doing near what they're supposed to do. There has to be kind of no repair or anything. They have to be in bad shape. And all of a sudden, they name the three of us as in charge today. What are the five things we need to do before lunch? I don't even know what to do. Do you?
No, I'm wondering, did we even have the right to go in there and do this?
Absolutely not. But
Mike did not.
But Mike makes right, according to a lot of people. Am I right, John, or not? I mean, don't,
yeah.
I mean, I,
if
it wouldn't be
if it's a question of letting the Chinese gain a foothold, we were going to act no matter. We didn't really care what people thought about it, I guess.
Well, the guy from Honduras was just convicted of doing the same stuff that this guy's been doing, and was sentenced to jail, and Trump pardoned him. Now he goes in and gets this guy and kills a whole bunch of people doing it. So explain that one to me, John.
Yeah.
Were there people killed in the raid?
Oh, God, yeah. Well, it was all his personal security force. We haven't heard the numbers yet, but I was reading stuff last night that a lot of those guys got killed, didn't they, Jen?
But yeah, I mean, just the the explosions and the the stuff going off. I gotta believe there were casualties. I don't know how many. But.
Yeah, we never have heard that. But I don't think it wasn't like 10,000 or anything. But it probably wasn't one either. I hope it wasn't 10,000. I'm gonna guess what, Jen, 100, maybe
yep,
more. I don't know.
Working number. I think this was designed to intimidate Colombia too, because their leader is the country has vastly improved over the last couple decades, but that guy's pretty antagonistic in his rhetoric to the U.S. So maybe this is a way of chastening him, telling him to shut up.
Well, most countries have been, I won't say happy, but not all that afraid of the U.S. having this kind of power. All power corrupts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, now, I don't know if you got up late, Nance, we're also going to take over Greenland. So the question is, the question last night on the news was, is the guy who runs Denmark afraid the same thing's going to happen to him? But will it?
Wait a minute, did this happen, that we took over Greenland?
No, but he said last night, by the way, we're still going to take over Greenland. Trump, in the middle of this other mess, he had to go mention Greenland again.
Is there a lore?
Yeah, that's kind of a lie.
What is all this going to do to the markets?
Right now, we're up a little bit. I mean, it's so undetermined that I don't think it's doing anything to you, John, except for Chevron's up 10 bucks, because it's the oil company that is still operating down there, and they're probably going to get the most of the. There's a European company, there's a Russian company, and there's Chevron still operating down there. And I think, everybody thinks that Chevron is the first man in, that they're going to gain most of this, whatever it is. Is that fair, Jen?
Yeah. Is this a different market, Tom? Because in the past, the questions of what would happen in a market kind of dictated, to some extent, geopolitics. We can't do that because that's going to kill the markets, or this somebody's going to really lose big if we do this. Now it seems like either the market's immune to these kinds of changes, or people just don't care. And this is not being figured into to any decision making. So that's kind of new and different, I think.
Well, the market right now, in one man's opinion, and I think if you dig up any old monetarist, the market is going to the beat of more money coming into the system. Where we're inflating the market by degrading the dollar.
And yeah.
When you say degrading the dollar, I don't mean against the pound or the franc or anything like that. Not the franc, the pound or the euro. I mean against other stuff. And Trump has said, even though the money supply has grown way faster than it should, it's not fast enough for him. I mean, he essentially wants us to be a minor Weimar Germany for some reason. I don't think he understands the system well enough to know what he's actually asking for. But having said that, if the money supply is up 10% in the next year, the market's going to be up 10%, at least. That's where the money goes. And that doesn't mean that, you know, the dollar in your pocket is going to be worth as much as it was at the beginning of the year. And as a matter of fact, it means exactly the opposite. But in nominal terms, the market will be up. I mean, I don't see how it couldn't be, John. Unless the inflation number gets so obvious to everybody that even though they've basically stopped giving them out and lying to people, if all of a sudden we get a 10-year rate, you know, the auction shows up and the Chinese and the Japanese and everybody else says, we're not doing that. It's at, where's the 10-year? It's 4.87. If we decide, okay, I'm not 10-year rate, I'm 30-year rate. If all of a sudden that comes in at like 8% 6 months from now, well, that's a massive problem for the market. So they have to make sure that they don't go that far. And right now they've been getting away with it. But I don't... just always remember, everybody, not just you guys, that the single biggest benefactor of higher inflation is the government.
Yep.
Madam Nancy, you understand where I'm coming from there?
Sort of. I mean, I'm just surprised that all the... It just seems a lot to take in
in a weekend, yeah.
Yeah, and not understand where, you know, what are we doing, why are we doing it. Now, John, you brought up a point that you think China would have went in and done it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the U.S., you know, was worried, and has been, I think, for some time, that China was looking for a foothold in the Western Hemisphere, like Venezuela, and had gotten in bed with Maduro, with, you know, all sorts of, you know, cooperative agreements to, you know, build and, you know, bail out or whatever. And they just inked, you know, like 600 deals Friday night. And there's, you know, pictures of the delegation from China meeting with Maduro. You know, everybody's grinning and clapping each other on the back. And I think this might have been the precipitating event. The U.S. wasn't going to wait anymore, because the next thing, we'd have, you know, missile bases in Venezuela like we had in Cuba in 1962, and we weren't going to tolerate that. So,
well, Lance, even if you, and John's probably right with that, but even if you didn't go anywhere down that road at all, there's a few facts that are absolutely on the table. One is Venezuela has more proven oil reserves than any other country in the world, including Saudi. So that's like kind of point one.
Okay, didn't know that. Go ahead.
I mean, it's heavy oil, so it's kind of hard to refine, but it's oil, And their production has gone nothing but straight down since they kicked all the oil companies out of there, except for a few, because they don't, you know, they can't keep their stuff together. But now China has this insatiable demand for oil, right? So I'm not so sure we wouldn't have done the same thing and say, wait a minute, here's a country with nothing but oil. Why don't we go in and lend them some money, which they have.
Right,
They provided $60 billion in oil-backed loans. Yeah, so that they're Venezuela's main source of external financing, and in return, they're going to get oil. Now, John might be right that years down the road, you might see a missile base popping up or something, but even leaving all that off the table, China sees this as a source of oil, you know, I'm not so sure that, you know, actually, we're pissed off they did it and not us, right?
Right.
What it comes down to. But it's not like...
Timing is everything.
Timing is everything. So, China says, okay, these guys got a bunch of oil. They can't get it out of the ground. We could really use it. And, oh, by the way, so could they, because their oil revenue is down so much. The whole country's in poverty. Let's lend them some money, put the stuff back together, and they can pay us off in oil. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward transaction, wouldn't you say, John? I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
I mean, but the way the Chinese have traditionally handled countries like this that are in desperate need of investment and don't have the ability to build infrastructure or make it work, you know, the Chinese have gone in and lent, quote, tons of money and resources and brought in their experts to get it up and running, and then these local places default on whatever the arrangement was, and the Chinese just take it over. So it's like a foreclosure of the infrastructure that the Chinese financed, and this was the plan all along. So the Chinese end up with, you know, not just, you know, having built something, but they've got political political presence now and a financial presence that makes them, you know, the party of interest, really, as opposed to the, whoever the elected leader may be. So this has been their template, and I think this is probably what they would be perfectly happy with in Venezuela down the road, too.
Nance, here's this. China became Venezuela's largest buyer of oil, taking over 80% of the exports at one point, and is a major investor in mining and infrastructure under initiatives like the Belt and Road Initiative. One of these days, John will explain that all to us. But here, oil was collateral. Loans were repaid with oil shipments, a deal that worked until Venezuela oil output plummeted. So now China's getting stiffed. Everybody's getting stiffed. So they're not all that happy. They probably figured they're not going to get half of their money back, even if we never went down there.
Right.
The money they gave him, this guy was so incompetent, he couldn't even, here, give me $60 billion to keep my oil wells going. Well, they're not going. Well, where's my 60? We don't know. I mean, so who knows? China might be pissed off at him, too.
It was a better month for the drug dealers than for the oil industry.
Yeah. It's you are absolutely correct, Nance, in saying how multifaceted and complicated this whole thing is. And, you know, is it as simple as putting the vice president in order, having a free election a year from now, turning this bus all around? Boy, oh boy. That didn't work in Iraq. It didn't work in Afghanistan. I mean, where has it ever worked, Jen?
Right, right.
I hope it's the first, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's got more going for it in that, you know, compared to Afghanistan, Venezuela has a rich history, cultural history, political. I mean, it was a flourishing place for a long time. And it could be one, again, with the right kind of management, whereas Afghanistan or, you know, Iraq, I mean, these are barely countries. You know? It's just, they have a history, but it's nomadic, and it's not something that you can really build on very effectively. Venezuela has a different kind of history.
What do they have other than, I should know more about the place, other than oil? I think they have enough, they can do agriculture and stuff, don't they? I mean, there's other external stuff, other stuff they can export, and how many people are there? Like 50 million? It's a lot, right?
Yeah, I mean, it used to be more, but I mean, it's well situated geographically. It's got, you know, wide waterfront, and Caracas is on the Caribbean, and you've got, you know, access to shipping, and you're close to the Panama Canal. I mean, all these things that should be enhancements to trade and commerce. And of all the countries in Latin America, Venezuela's got, you know, really good access. You know, it's closer, for example, than Brazil or Argentina to, you know, with shipping ports. So, I think, you know, it's got a lot of pluses, but in the right hands only. You know, it has such terrible management that it's hard to remember just how flourishing it once was.
But now Trump's going to run it, so we should be okay.
Well, I'd like to think that, you know, we can strategize with some kind of private enterprise plan that, you know, gets, you know, people back on, you know, the payroll and not just on the government dole or drug money supporting them.
Well, I think we all could agree, even though how it happened and how it stuff is that international law violation, I happen to think it is, but the bottom line is, if 2 years from now these guys, and I don't know what handicap I give this, these guys have a regular election where the person who wins actually gets to take power this time, but not like last time, and all of a sudden, you know, the poverty level's down to 60% from 80, these guys are pumping out oil like they're capable of, I think the world would be a better place, don't you? If
absolutely.
And which means that everybody wouldn't have to leave their country to have a livelihood, which would be nice. I mean, there's a lot of things, but it just somehow or another, why is none of this ever worked? I mean, it just never has, has it? Nation building.
Why didn't any of this come out in the news analysis all weekend?
Oh, it was there. I mean, what we're talking about, we're trying to tell the truth. They're not. We're trying to hide it all, Nance. What do you think? The two Johns and I have been feverishly going over this all last night, trying to find what's going on.
Oh, my I didn't know any. I mean, I was missing all these pieces of information, especially the fact that you think really China could have done it. I mean, somebody was going to do it, is what you're basically saying.
Well, I mean, yeah. No, these places have stayed. You know, Argentina stayed a cesspool for a century. I mean, there's no. I mean, how long has Iran stayed this way? I mean,
yeah, Argentina's never really caught back up with itself.
they were considered. I remember, Jan, we were in school. Somebody said in 1922 they were considered the most up and coming country in the world. 40 years later, they haven't progressed a smidge, had they?
Well, and it was probably the most European of Latin American countries because it had a German presence, it had a Portuguese presence, it had a Spanish presence. You know, it had its indigenous population, and it had tons of culture, you know, music and the arts. And I mean, it was a wonderful place, absolutely wonderful place.
Well, they don't have any of the, I mean, any, but I don't know if this is, I mean, it's surely not racial or whatever, but it's, I mean, when you look at how many people actually have some sort of a democratic system, what percentage of the world? Us in Europe, and us in Canada, and, you know, it's, I mean, as my buddy Mark Duffy once said, didn't we try and have elections in Libya or something, John, way back?
Oh, yeah.
Mark and I were on the board and we were having a cocktail one night, and he goes, what are we doing? You know, there is no concept of the peaceful transition of power. There's no concept of being the loyal opposition where you lose, you leave for a while, you try and figure out what you did wrong, you get a better platform together for the next election, and you try again. He goes, there's nothing in any of these people's history that gives them any sort of a knowledge of what that even means.
No.
So if you don't have that behind you, what good is an election?
Well, and that's why I think that, you know, in Iran, for example, you know, there's a whole, you know, part of the resistance now to the theocracy that they have. You know, let's bring back a secular monarchy like the Shah. That's preferable to living under Sharia, you know, where every aspect of your dress and behavior is controlled because of your relationship to Allah. And, you know, for the places like that, a monarchy would be preferable.
Well, how is it, Jan or Nance, I'll ask you, because I don't get out as much as some people. Certainly not like John Lee on high seas in November or December in the Queen Mary, wherever he was at. Every person I've met from Cuba, every person I've met from Iran has been amazingly well-educated, very nice, very family-oriented, and can't stand their regimes.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never met a Cuban person that wasn't industrious, bright, pleasant, I mean, for God's sake. And, same people with people from Iran. Every one of them's got more degrees than I do. and yet, I mean, a couple of guys that live in Ogden Dune said, I can't go back to Iran even though I have some family there. They won't let me out because I'm an engineer. They'll block me here. I mean, everybody wants these people the hell out of there. How do people that industrious and that, I'm going to say, I mean, the whole place isn't nice, but how do they end up with these governments? But they do. I mean, I just think that we better feel here how lucky we are and make sure that we preserve ours, because there are not very many like it, are there?
No, and of course they've got the wrong in Iran. I mean, they've got countries like Russia and China supporting, you know. So you can't really take on your own government without also taking on the other governments that are propping them up, because they want that kind of control. And that, you know, it has nothing to do with the population anymore. They're outclassed by not just the crazy people running their country, but the other crazy people in the world who want to see those crazy people continue.
Well, in our revolution, if you had a musket, you were pretty much the equal of the British soldier.
Right.
If you got nothing and they got a tank, you're pretty much, the handicap's on you, buddy, right?
Right, right.
Well, so, Nance, that's what happens when all you do is stare at the Bear game instead of the news.
I guess so. I'm sorry. I wanted to shut off the Bears game.
You drive yourself crazy.
Honest to God, it's just, I am extremely happy that they won this year. I mean, I expected maybe we'd be lucky if we got 8-8. I mean, I thought, well, you know, maybe if we went 50-50. But we did better than that. We've been entertained. Are they going to win the playoffs? I don't know. This weekend ought to be absolutely nuts.
Saturday night.
Yeah, if we got the Packers back again, it's going to be, it's just going to be like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me.
Well, you know, it's this year, I mean, I of course predicted the Bears were going to lose way more games, so I was wrong all. But I don't know, I've ever seen injuries take the kind of toll on these teams, both up and down, now that it's a 17-game season. And right now, I don't think anybody wants to play the Vikings. There are people that were all hurt, most of them are back, and they won five games in a row. I think right now they're the best team in the division. Even though they're not close to the playoffs. I mean, these teams, they have a few people out, they lose five in a row, they come back, they win five in a row. You look right now at the teams that you wouldn't want to play, most of them aren't even in the playoffs, are they?
Well, I don't even know what to say. I'm just floored at the way this whole season went. But you are right about the injuries, boy. They were bad.
Well, the Bears are the only. Well, you know, again, I don't. Where's Matty Weber when I need him? Because, but I'm going to say the Bears, other than the left tackle who didn't play last night, or yesterday afternoon, the offensive line's been healthy the whole year. I was watching Seattle playing San Francisco. In San Francisco, they scored 35 points on the Bears, and they couldn't do anything against Seattle. Now, Seattle's got a great defense, but they got an all-pro left tackle. He's not playing. The guy who's after him, he's pretty good. He gets knocked out in the third quarter. They put some guy in there who was either his first or second snap ever. Well, duh. The team's not as good as they were last week. You take an all-pro out of there to replace it with, like, John Flanagan or me. It makes quite a difference, doesn't it? I mean, I'm not saying the guy's that bad, but
not really. You guys are really good. I'm sure you would.
Well. We'd be fine. We'd like the guy with the stop sign in the State Farm commercial.
Well, how did you like seeing Philip Rivers?
Yeah, well, what's his name? The kid from Notre Dame played yesterday.
Oh, God.
Well, what's his name? Riley Leonard.
Unbelievable.
Yes, Riley Leonard.
Wasn't he the quarterback?
Yeah. Well, if Rivers didn't play yesterday, Riley Leonard played, their second string guy. He was hurt, too. That's why they dragged Rivers up. Rivers did pretty good for a guy 44 years old.
And he has five more years of health insurance for his family.
But he can't get in the Hall of Fame now for 5 years, though.
Oh, I think he wanted the health insurance for his 9 or 10 kids.
Well, he was prolific. Is he Irish?
I don't know.
Anyway, so Nancy, your questions are all there. John, when are we going to have answers for? 5 years from now?
Well,
if do you think that there is a, I guess the question is, and how would anybody ever know? Do you think there's a governmental structure, I use the term bureaucracy, under this Maduro goofball, that if turned back on and allowed to do what they're supposed to do, is even remotely competent? Or do you think, I mean, somebody, are they, can even cash a check down there? I mean, I have no idea how destitute the place is. Can you cash a check if you drive a bus? Are you getting your paycheck? I mean, I have no idea. Do you, Jen?
No, I don't.
And if you're not, how do you start all that up again?
Yeah, well, we've had 17, 18 years of no experience in the way that the rest of the world functions financially, pretty much. And that's a big, game of catch-up to play. But, I think that it's not like a lot of places. There are educated people there. There are people who remember what it used to be and, would love to see some kind of, cultivation of what it was, and are willing to pitch in. I'm sure that there's a core constituency among the population, if they really see a serious attempt to correct what went off the rails. But that's the trouble. I mean, it had elections traditionally, but then when the election process gets completely corrupted, and you get fake elections or no elections or crooked elections, that's kind of what they've gotten used to. So it's
sours. You mean we get. I guess I'm on my soapbox for a second, but you get a lot of people today, especially maybe younger people. I guess I'll be nasty and say people have never done anything in their life. Not that anybody has never done anything in their life, but people say at the Federal Reserve, they go, screw these guys, they don't agree with Trump or they're doing this or doing that. we don't need these people. We don't need a Federal Reserve. Well, bullshit. Every time you write a check, how do you think the check gets to your bank? But just the mundane stuff that we're so used to here.
Right.
People have no idea how complicated that really is. If somebody wants to, you know, pick up a few British pounds for their trip to Britain because, you know, they got to go over there and play golf in Britain, how that settles overseas at just the precise time and with all the other transactions like that in the world, we have no concept of how complicated that all is. I mean, if you don't have any of that, how the hell do you even start it up? I wouldn't have a clue. You know, and right now, if you give somebody a check in Venezuela, does it flow through a system? I bet not. Maybe it does. I don't know. I mean, maybe there is an infrastructure that still works, but I get the feeling there isn't. What do you guys think?
That's like Somalia.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not as bad as Somalia, but it's in that mold.
Yeah. I mean, people were ragging all over when we gave the Iranians the cash money.
When we sent the plane of cash.
Yeah, well, we've got them out of the check system, the worldwide check system. If you're in Iran, you can't cash a check. You can get money from anywhere overseas.
It had to be in Swiss francs, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, no, I mean, they're out of whatever the system is that allows somebody from Iran to cash a check, we get American dollars, they can't do it. I mean, the little stuff that we take for granted every day is, I mean, does anybody have any idea what it takes to get a gallon of milk from the farm in Wisconsin to your fridge? And if all of a sudden that all broke down, how in God's name do you start it up? Just the day-to-day stuff, I think people have no concept of how complicated it really is. I mean, I have a little bit of knowledge of it because I know how complicated it was to run the CBOE and for all these stocks. What if all of a sudden you sent money to a broker and you never got your stock? Duh. That wouldn't be very popular, would it?
Right.
I mean, every little thing we do is so complicated and somebody's doing it. If all of a sudden you were in a country where they didn't know how to do any of that stuff, we wouldn't know how to live there, would we?
No.
Let's go down to the store. What store? Well, isn't there a store? Now there's no store.
I mean, there's lots of good models, like in the former Soviet states, which were, you know, they weren't as benighted or cruelly treated maybe as the people of Venezuela, but even countries like Ireland that were, you know, nothing but a colony for how many hundreds of years, and you know, you give it a chance, and you know, you give it the freedom to have its own representative government, and it can flourish, you know, pretty quickly. So it isn't like it's impossible for it to happen, but it's kind of a heady time with people who are not used to this and have gotten lazy about, you know, how their lives are run, and maybe are kind of happy to have everybody else make the decisions for them, and they don't care about it. That's a bad situation. I don't have the feeling that's been the case in Venezuela.
I don't
think
either.
Those people are oppressed.
Well, if Irish can do it, everybody can do it, right, John?
Yeah.
all these little grumpy Irish guys, if they could do it, everybody else could do it, right? God. Anyway, thank you guys for starting out the new year nicely here. Jimmy, nice job. SP Fuse
up 27. Happy New Year to all.
Yeah, Happy New Year to everybody.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Are you guys going to see each other this year?
I've been asking you to send me John's information so I can get something together, but I haven't got it yet.
What are you going to send him a care package?
Well, I was going to try and set up a time we could all meet, but I mean,
all right.
Obviously, John doesn't want to meet you, John.
I want to meet you, Nancy.
Oh, God. All right. SP Fuse up 27. SP Fuse up 214. Jimmy, thank you. Happy New Year to everybody. We did that on Friday. Maybe not everyone was listening on Friday. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
All right, thanks.
That's all, folks.